Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 27th day of August, Anno Domini 2022, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And it's 6 minutes after the hour. We're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Here comes the news.
Ta-da.
Bloomer.
This is weird.
Leon Redbone. What?
Facebook is working today.
Wow. That's a wow indeed from here.
But the live button has been moved again. Where the hell did they move the live? Go live button.
They don't like you. There it's, it is. It's all about you.
Go live.
Yeah. Apple has asked its employees to spend more time in the office as pandemic restrictions continue to loosen, but it has again been met with organized resistance and an internal petition advocating for more time working from home. A week ago, Apple once again announced a deadline for when its corporate employees should return to the office at least 3 days a week. This time, the date is September 5th. Beginning that day, the company will require its employees to work on site Tuesdays and Thursdays, as well as one additional weekday that will be decided on a team-by-team basis. So they pick 2 days and a third day to be named later. This was not the first time Apple made such an announcement, but the company's leadership has repeatedly had to postpone the shift in light of new developments in the pandemic since first announcing a three-day plan in June of 2021. Some of the company's employees have formed an internal advocacy group called Apple Together to push back against further return-to-office plans, an internal petition that Apple's workers are happier and more productive working from home, and that a uniform mandate from senior leadership ignores compelling reasons why many employees should be able to continue to work from home. Instead of demanding a blanket work-from-home policy, though, the employee group advocates a system whereby individual employees could talk with their direct managers to decide expectations on a case-by-case basis without high-level approvals or complex procedures, making things more restrictive. Apple's leadership, Apple leadership's resistance to more flexible remote work policies may counter the company's goals of attracting and retaining talent in competitive fields. To that point, a notable machine learning director named Ian Goodfellow left Apple for Alphabet subsidiary DeepMind and named remote work policy as a reason for his departure. Our poll of the week. Well, of course, this issue is hitting every company, yeah. Not just Apple, but this one, this particular piece of information is about Apple. Our poll of the week at soundbites.org. That is Bites with a Y. Francis would like us to remind you, is work from home or work in office? Your choices are work from home, I prefer to work in the office, don't care, work, what is work, and other. So far, we've got 21 votes, and work, I knew this, what is work, is the number one choice. I knew that was going to happen. I almost didn't put it in because I really wanted to know, but okay. And then, of course, if you've got more to say about this, you can head on over to our website, soundbites.org. That's Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. On the left, scroll down on the right under Fascinating Stuff, you'll see the forum. Second forum down is the poll discussion. Currently, at least, the number one item under poll discussion is 27/22, work from home or work in office. So far, we've got three people talking about that. And you can join them. Also, you can join us, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
I would love to work at home, but it's tricky in my job. I'd have to take all the tools and ESD workbench and carry the customer's computer home. And Dave had it nice putting the shop in the basement of his house.
That was easy. And of course, it depends. And you're right, and it completely depends on what your job is.
Yeah.
So, for example, at Apple, many of those people are programmers or designers, or they can be anywhere. On the other hand, Apple just built a umpty billion dollar
$1.5 billion. Yeah.
Yeah.
maybe pushing two by the end of it.
Right.
One of the rumors, rumors isn't quite the right word. One of the thoughts behind the work from home is that there's a real strict policy inside of Apple about not talking to anyone on another team and spilling secrets. And that's one of the reasons that Siri didn't work very well with the HomePod, because they're different teams and they can't talk to each other.
How is it that people on your own cheese and crackers company?
So the Siri people can talk to the Siri people. And the HomePod people can talk to the HomePod people, but you can't talk to each other.
And that gives you a product that doesn't work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. As long as Apple's happy with that, that's fine.
And not get full input from a different point of view.
There was a story that Steve Jobs wanted one bathroom per floor on that mile in circumference spaceship campus because he didn't want people running into each other at the bathroom. So don't go. In fact, I've read stories about that where companies make you clock out to go to the bathroom because they don't want to pay you to go to the bathroom.
Right, right.
And the National Labor Relations Board gets involved. In fact, the National Labor Relations Board is getting involved with this Apple thing, too.
I bet they are. And if anybody else had said we're only having one bathroom per mile long floor, people would have said, you're crazy. It's Steve Jobs. So they all wonder, oh, that sounds reasonable.
Well, apparently Johnny Ive was able to countermand that. And now they have sufficient bathrooms.
The health standards?
Yeah.
I would think that
it's one bathroom with 50 stalls in it.
Yeah, but it's still in all.
Yeah, no. No.
Yeah.
You know, there are days when walking a mile to a bathroom.
Yeah.
I mean, you'll do that for Woodstock. I don't know that you want to do that for your job on a daily basis.
And you hear that now about the fulfillment centers for large unnamed companies, where you get docked if you have to go to the bathroom too many times. And so people are peeing in bottles at their workstation.
Yep.
And the former CEO of said company tweeted, oh, that doesn't happen, and got inundated with pictures of people's bottles saying, oh, yes, it does.
Oh, yes, it does. So remember, when you get that smiley package at your door, the person who handled it peed in a bottle and therefore didn't wash their hands.
We let our FedEx and UPS drivers use our bathroom no problem.
All the time.
Yeah, and sometimes they say that's because most businesses, our bathroom happens to be near the door, so most businesses don't have that.
Right.
So they have to wait until they get to our office.
I'll tell you, that's one thing. I've been driving now for 6 years.
Yeah.
And that's one thing you learn where throughout the cities. Matter of fact, there's a good one, believe it or not, and a lot of folks didn't know it. Holy Sepulchre Cemetery.
Holy Sepulchre. They have a...
Oh, they got real nice ones.
Real nice ones. And they're not very well used.
And they're very clean.
Because they're not very well used.
Yeah.
I worked at the computer center on Monroe Avenue, our bathroom was in the basement, and it was exactly the kind of basement you would imagine. And people did not want to go down there, and every once in a while our driver would say, I hate to ask this, and he'd say, you know where it is. All right, to the phones. Our first caller is Dave from Canandaigua, New York. Hiya, Dave. What's up?
Well, I got a problem with – I'll tell you what I'm up to. I'm doing a Zoom session. And I have a soundboard with a USB feed into the computer. And I'm also using an IP camera to provide the video for that. And there's some musical kind of thing involved with it. So the sync between the sound and the video needs to be pretty tight. So I just installed OBS Studio. And I know there's a settings in there under the advanced sound settings or whatever. And I've been putting numbers in there. It doesn't seem to make any difference at all to try and sync the sound.
Yeah, that is a big issue in syncing. You know, half a second off and is really noticeable.
Yeah.
Fortunately, I'm able to plug into the soundboard here, so I don't have to worry about the different mics having a different sync.
Are you syncing with yourself or with someone else somewhere else?
No, so are you talking the room?
Right within your room. So it's your IP camera and your USB soundboard.
The units in the dialog box are milliseconds.
Right.
So you have to put in a thousand to make it 1 second. So if you're putting in 50, 51, 52, you won't notice the difference.
Right. No, I had it 1,000 and 2,000. There's four different items under that advanced settings menu.
Yeah.
And I set them all to the same values, and that doesn't seem to make any difference.
Well, they probably need to be different values so that each of the different audio signals, so like one mic might need 500, another mic might need 750. So
none of the mics except for the USB are actually doing anything.
But the
trick is they're not labeled exactly the same as what that appears on the outside world.
Right. You're going to have to do some playing around. And the reason is your IP camera and your soundboard are not in sync. So what you have to do is figure out which one is behind and raise that one, and how much it's behind and raise that one high. If you set both of them the same, then it's going to be behind the same amount every time.
And whether
it's definitely the sound is definitely behind, it's way ahead of the video. The video takes more time to process.
Okay, so, then you need to raise.
You either delay the thing that's too early,
or speed up the
speed
thing
up the thing that's too late. Yeah. So I have found I found a website that will let you calculate the delay in the audio so that you can put in the number that works. And I'm going to post that right now.
Yeah, I can probably come close enough just, you know, by guessing or, you know, by eyeball or whatever. The trick, I can't change anything at all no matter what I do. What I input, it just does not seem to work.
Said that you were increasing both of them the same.
All the different audio devices. Because you've got the computers, the OBS recognizes the microphone and the laptop, all the audio components of the laptop itself, plus the USB.
Well, turn off everything except in OBS. Turn off everything except the USB.
There's a checkbox to show only active sources, so then it hides things that don't have an active signal on them.
Yeah, I will try and hunt that down. But I'm pretty sure, like I said, I set all the devices to the same value. So if I was reading from the wrong one, I still should have got the right result.
Well, the one that's happening too early, you have to delay that one and not the other ones.
Right, but if I'm not hearing the other ones, then if I set them all the same, then the one I'm hearing, if I'm, like I say, the labels in the advanced settings aren't a perfect matchup to the names of the devices of the real world. It doesn't
and my screen,
say the USB audio.
On my screen, they are the same.
Yeah. Well, the other thing you'll probably need to do is to go into the Windows settings for audio and turn off all of the devices you don't want.
Yeah, that'll be my next move. The trick is I've been using SplitCam to channel the IP camera into Zoom.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm afraid if I only have so many days to sort through problems before I have to run another session.
Right.
And if I turn too many things off, I won't be ready for the next time around. But that'll be my next move, I guess.
You got to record all your settings now so you can go back to them when you...
Right. Yeah. Write them all down.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. Well, I guess I'll keep at it. And thanks for your help.
Good luck. Thanks.
Yep.
Bye-bye. Yeah, this is why we let Steve do all the OBS stuff. It's a young man's game.
And there's so many buttons they have to push.
Many buttons. It's
but now that I've got everything set up, and I figured out it matters which port I plug the cameras in. If I plug them into the same port as last week, then it's auto-recognized. Otherwise, I have to reconfigure the ports.
Interesting. What, for those of you who haven't caught up yet, OBS is the open broadcast system. And it is it's what Steve uses here, and it lets you take multiple inputs, video and audio, multiple video and multiple audio, and mix them together into one source and then send that wherever you like, Zoom or wherever. So
I've got to go into Facebook and Twitch right now.
Right.
And YouTube.
Right. So
that multi-broadcasting was a key thing to find, so I didn't have to have three different broadcasters running.
Right. Right. And what you have to realize is that OBS is the open broadcasting system. It is free, and it is very capable, but that also makes it very complex. And when you're talking about taking video and audio from multiple sources, weaving them all together, sending that weave back out to multiple sources, it takes a while to get it right.
And talent.
Yeah.
And there's a couple of really good YouTube guys that I have found how to do things, as well as OBS itself has its own YouTube channel for doing descriptions and how-tos on how to use some of the functions. There's so many buttons in there I don't understand, and I haven't needed to use them yet.
Right. It is a professional studio. It really is. It was for certain levels of professional. Obviously, you know, if you're recording... I don't know, the Beatles. You're a Poltergeist thing.
Similar to Ableton Live or Apple's Logic is more of an editor rather than a broadcaster.
Right. Right. But Ableton and OBS are similar.
What's the other one? Blackmagic.
There's several of them out there. But OBS is free and it works quite well. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Brent from Fairport, New York. Hi, Brent. What's up?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I've got an old PC that's running Linux. I don't know how old it is, probably 7 or 8 years old, and the video's failing, so I want to replace it. And would I be better off to get a by the way, I'm really cheap. My budget is between $100 and $200. Would I be better off to get a refurbished PC for around 100 or 120, or how about a one of these mini PCs like B-Link? I'm just doing light work on Linux too.
Well, yes, pretty much anything that'll run Linux. You know, it's got to have. You really want 4 gigs of RAM at least.
All right.
And
eight's better.
Eight's better, but four. Yeah. Right. Eight's better, depending on how much stuff you multitask.
One of the big things with refurbished is you never know why it's refurbished.
Yeah, right.
Did somebody buy it and just decide they didn't want it, or did they have so many problems with it they returned it?
Yeah, and I don't know how. It's hard to tell how old it is, too.
Yeah,
right.
Almost components can't. Were replaced or not replaced.
Yep.
Right. Now, I will say I have bought my last 3-4 computers refurbished from Woot, really Amazon.
You know how to fix them.
I know how to fix them if I need to.
Yeah.
I call Dave, and that's how I fix them. If it's hardware, and they all run Linux, this last one's been running for 4 or 5 years now, but it's always a crapshoot.
Right.
But if you're looking at one of those mini PCs, again, if it's got enough RAM and it's got enough, disk space, most of them will run Linux.
Didn't you say that? Woot has that Dell Latitude for $85. Yeah.
There's a 12-inch Woot laptop for $85 up today. Is it refurbished? Probably.
Yeah, most likely.
Doesn't say.
Yes, it does. Refurbished.
Not on the big front window.
Yeah. Click on it and you see it. So there's lots of stuff that's out there. Refurbished that works well.
It's buyer beware, though. You gotta look it over. You know, some deals can be too good to be true. Others, you know, shop wisely.
Right. And in general, if you're going to buy something used, check the warranty. For example, the Woot thing today comes with a 90-day warranty, but you can buy a warranty separately, an additional warranty. Whenever you go to buy something. Particularly if it's a laptop, because the theory with a laptop is you're going to carry it around. You want an extended warranty. And so a new machine would probably suit you better. But getting something new for under, say, $300 is a little dicey when it comes to quality and speed. Et cetera, et cetera.
Check out Woot, though. At least you're getting some kind of guarantee versus buying off of some individual say, off of eBay or that type of stuff, because you're at least getting a 90-day guarantee.
This is not going to be a laptop. It's going to sit on my desk. How about if I bought a Mini, would you suggest it have a fan in it? Or there's a lot of fanless units, too.
Yeah, fans are not a bad thing, particularly if you're living, in an area that gets hot in the summer, like, oh, I don't know, Rochester, New York, and you don't have air conditioning, you really want a fan.
Okay.
There's a thin client for $119 on Moot.
Yeah, but that's a thin client. So who are you going to boot from?
Yeah.
Right. If you're getting a Mini PC for under, say, $250,
yep,
be aware that it's all about the warranty.
Okay.
But yeah, Mini PC, any of those things running Linux, it's never about the box size. It's all about the RAM and the hard drive.
And you can even get one that has Windows on it now and just put Linux on it yourself.
Well, right. All these seem to come with Windows, which I would immediately overwrite, or whatever the word is, with Linux.
Right. Replace it completely.
Right.
And the other thing that you should be aware of is that a solid-state drive, of course, will be much faster.
Right.
Yeah. So, for example, my laptop here, I replaced the hard drive, which booted up Windows in 30 seconds, with a solid-state drive that boots up Linux in 8 seconds. So, if it is something you're not going to leave on all the time, that's a consideration.
Okay. All right. Very good. Thank you.
All right. Thanks. Good luck. Yeah, there's I was thinking of actually picking up one of those Dell Latitudes. If you are looking at something like that, those Dell Latitudes will run Chrome OS Flex. They're actually on the list and are supported until 2028. So you got 6 years on that for those.
And there are a few brands that do have models with Linux pre-installed, but they're generally in the higher price market. In fact, wasn't there a vendor lawsuit against Microsoft that they were charging companies like Lenovo and Dell a Windows license even for computers that didn't have Windows on it?
Yes.
So for every computer you sell, you pay this Windows license. But these ones don't have Windows on it. Well, too bad. You still got to pay the license.
Well, yeah, the one that I just got from Woo, that came with Windows 10 on it. And I went through the initial install because it wanted to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I did a reboot and popped in my USB drive with Linux on it.
Done.
Xubuntu on it.
Done. I know a lot of people dual boot and then find that, in fact, they never go back into Windows once they've really learned Linux.
Yeah, no, it's like, and since I've discovered, like I told you a few weeks ago, the one thing that was holding me back was my banking program, Quicken. Well, I found that Money Dance, and that is so cool. Matter of fact, I even found the other feature of, took me a little while, but playing around with the screen, because you can change all your colors and the way you want it to look and everything else. It was like, yeah, this is what I want.
Yep. When you can, it's the eye candy.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's easier to read, depending on some of the settings they had were very hard to read. So, yeah.
Right. All right. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. So, John, I know you're on the line. Hang on. We'll get to you right when we come back. It is 29 minutes after the hour. You are listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe. That is Soundbites right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you that we are member supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you in just a couple of minutes.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Hey. All right, that's enough of that. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have John all the way from Pittsburgh, PA on the line. Hi, John, what's up?
Hi, how are you doing? Another Linux question. I have a backup HP notebook, which, like, within the last 6 months, I just got rid of. I couldn't upgrade it to Windows 11, so I just decided to get rid of it and put Linux on it.
Good move.
And everything seems to work fine, but I don't use it that much, and I just pulled it out the other day and wanted to check on updates and stuff like that. And then I got this authentication warning coming up. So I went to, and I couldn't, I have my password written right on the computer, so, and it still wouldn't allow me in. So I went to YouTube and, I don't know, I went to so many different configurations with what I found on YouTube, but none of them seems to be able to get me to, like, get in to be able to, you know, download updates or anything. I'm in the computer, but, you know, I can't do anything, you know.
So the computer actually boots up and runs fine.
Yeah.
Because it auto boots, it automatically goes into your desktop. It doesn't ask you for Unix. Username and password.
Right.
Okay. So the username and password it's asking for, you actually have your password.
Yeah.
The question is, well, it's a couple of questions.
Yeah.
One, did you have the caps lock on when you created that password?
I've gone through that too. You know, I put it in cap and went through the whole line, nothing. I mean, it worked before. The passwords got me, well, I don't know, but yeah, I've tried that mode.
I've seen cases where the password file gets corrupted, and it will not accept the correct password.
Can you reset it?
You could try resetting it, but
in
it
the
has,
terminal,
it has to accept the correct password in order to change the password. Otherwise, you erase it and start over.
Well, the problem is you have to be able to log in as root.
Yeah.
Generally, right. Root doesn't have a separate password, which means you use your password. But if you can't use your password, how do you get into root?
Because they're one and the same.
Right, right. You can...
Thinking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm just...
I don't know.
Thinking. If you boot with your install CD or thumb drive, one of your choices will be recovery mode. And that may allow you to then
reset the
log in as root without a password and then reset your user's password.
Why would I have a thumb drive in the computer?
Well, how did you load the Linux onto the machine?
Oh, okay. Right.
Yeah, it's that you boot up with that one, and one of the choices would be
recovery.
On the menu would be, you boot up as the thing, and then one of the choices will be recovery. But you can do that. There's also a rescue CD. That you can find Linux Rescue CD. Hold on a second.
I'm seeing this question go back decades.
Yeah.
So it's not uncommon whether that helps or not.
System Rescue, system-rescue.org has a rescue CD that you can download that lets you do all kinds of stuff like that. But that's, you know, that's the problem when you only have the one login and you can't get there. I get that.
Because one of the things it said to do was just restart the computer, hold down the shift key, and it would take me to what is it, new GNU, what's the other name?
That's the way. If you, what version of Linux are you running?
Mint Cinnamon.
Oh, Cinnamon. Yeah. Okay, hold on.
I just found something that if you can get to a terminal, you type passwd space and then your username, and let you create a new password for that username.
If you're,
yeah, but they ask you for your old one.
Yeah, you have to authenticate yourself.
Well, this one says just enter your new password.
Well, if you're the root, yes, but you have to be root at that point. Mm. To enter rescue mode single user mode in Linux Mint. While you're booting, hold the shift key down.
Yeah, I did that, but it doesn't take me to this site that I keep on seeing. When I go through the instructions on YouTube, this person has, hold down the shift, and then it will take you to this site. It says, GNU.
The GNU Grub menu. Yeah. It's the bootloader, and you have a choice.
What?
You have a choice of regular Mint or Mint in recovery mode, and the one you want is recovery mode. But you're saying that, now are you holding down the shift key or are you tapping the shift key?
No, I'm holding it down.
Yeah, that's what it's, right from before you even turn the machine on.
Yeah. And then I've had other people, other YouTube stuff say, hold down the control, ultimate, and tap the backspace. I mean, stuff comes up.
I'm also seeing control alt F1.
Yeah, every machine is going to be a little different. Mm-hmm. The problem is how their hardware is set up. So you may need to try a bunch of different ones depending on who makes your computer and what version of BIOS they're running on it.
Or the other thing is, and I hate to say this, is do you have a lot of stuff on it?
I would just
say the heck with it. Cut bait and reload Linux.
That's what I was thinking.
if it's just something you're playing around with, it's just as easy to do that as anything else.
Yeah.
And then this time, create a separate. You can create a separate password for root, and you can also
have a regular account you run in and that isn't root.
Right.
Okay.
Well, that's normal under most Linuxes nowadays. You have to do something else to run as root.
But yeah, I would say the heck with it. Save yourself the pain and aggravation. As installing Linux is very easy, and you'll be back up probably running in half the time than if you try to keep trying all these different YouTube videos and everything else.
Yeah, I know. Okay. Okay, one more question now.
Yeah.
Okay. When I got rid of Windows and put Linux on, I was thinking, I won't get as many commercial interruptions on some game sites, okay?
Right.
So I go to this chess site that I go to all the time, and before, when I go to play a game on it, no ads come on. Now with Linux, when I'm trying to play chess, all these ads start popping up. What happened?
Well,
you're not running an ad blocker in that browser.
Right. What you want to do is add something like uBlock Origin or some other ad blocker. I happen to like uBlock Origin. A lot of people now are using the DuckDuckGo connection program. These are add-ins to your browser. So you go into whatever browser you're using, go into the add-ins or extensions area, and type uBlock, the letter U, the word block, Origins, and install that, or the DuckDuckGo app and install that.
Right. Okay.
But there's a lot of those out there. I use a a program that also blocks ads in YouTube and a couple of other places. And so Sponsor Block, it's called. And those are installed per browser. So if you use a different browser, you won't see them. And obviously, if you, you know, installed Linux clean, you're not going to see them until you install them.
One of the problems you may run into is that since most websites make their money from ads, many websites will ask you to turn off your blocker so you can see that website. Otherwise, they have to start charging you to view the website.
Right. Okay. All right. You've been helpful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a good day.
You too. One of the things that I discovered with the DuckDuckGo one is that it turns itself off on Facebook. And if you look at it, it says DuckDuckGo, whatever they call it, is not running on this site because it breaks the site.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, okay, I get it.
Many sites just don't work if you block ads or block cookies. Or if you block all the stuff that you don't want running, the site doesn't work
so,
because they really want it running.
Let me tell you the cool thing I found this week. duck.com/email, and it lets you create an email address from DuckDuckGo. So you could be, you know, asknick@duck.com or whatever it all is.
Not compatible with Safari.
Well, I can't help you there. But the point
well,
here
Safari
is...
Safari does that for you automatically.
Right. The point here is that what it does is it takes... you use it for, you know, when you have to sign up for something, you don't ever want to see anything from them again. You sign up with these people and what you with that address.
Mm-hmm.
And what DuckDuckGo does is removes every tracker and then sends it to whatever email address you give it. And if you respond, it goes back through DuckDuckGo and blocks any following in your email. So I've been using it for the last couple of days. I set up two of them because the first one I set up, for some reason I can receive but not send. And that's a problem with my setup that I just have to do when it's not 2:00 in the morning.
Yeah, Apple has added that to Safari and Mail on macOS and iOS. So when you're signing up for something like that, you can give it a fake address. It goes through Apple. They block all trackers. They will open... linked images remotely on their server,
right?
To see if it's malicious or not before they send it to your server, which then also screws up the ad tracking because all the ads are now getting Apple's IP address and not yours.
Right, right. So for those of you who are not using Safari and not using an Apple, duck.com/email.
I'm posting it now.
Is a nice alternative to that and. Again, it's the address you want to use when you're signing up. You know, when somebody says, "Oh, we'll be happy to send you this. Just give us your email address."
Mm-hmm.
The one you're going to get.
I often use my Yahoo address for that because I never look at it. I think every now and then we'll log into it here when we're talking about a Yahoo problem. And they stopped counting your inbox number, so it says 999 plus unread messages in my inbox.
Right.
Well, that's why I have an extra Google account that is just. Garbage. I mean, if I know, you know, that they require an email address, I just put it in this one and I never go to it anyways.
Yep.
I created it just for that.
What's nice about this one, though, is that some of them say you have to respond to this email.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yep.
And if that happens, then there's DuckDuckGo is stripping out all the trackers and preventing them from even knowing where you're coming from.
Cool.
So it's nice. For
that's worth looking at.
So, you know, often I'll be signing up for something. You know, somebody says, download this hints for Python or, you know, 50 tricks you need to know for what OBS or whatever.
And number 7 will astound you.
But number 7 never astounds me. Not ever. And I wish there was someone I could, in fact, place a bet with every time I see one of those bet you didn't know.
Yeah.
Website. Oh, I'll bet you I do, and I'll give you odds.
I'm that old.
I'm that old. But yeah, so if you're looking for an anonymous email address, using duck.com/email is actually So far as we know, DuckDuckGo has been said to be. In fact, that's my next news item. Might as well read it.
I say, lead into it.
Might as well read it. DuckDuckGo's tracker-removing email service, which has been available in private beta for a year, is now open to anyone who uses a DuckDuckGo mobile app or browser extension or Mac browser. Except, apparently, Safari.
It worked in Chrome.
It worked in Chrome. It also has added a few more privacy tools. The service provides you a duck.com email address, one intended to give out for the kind of subscribe to our newsletter for 20% off emails you know exist only to harvest data and target you for ads. Email sent to your duck.com address forwards to your chosen primary email, but with trackers removed. I actually have a throwaway address. So now my duck.com address forwards to my throwaway address. So I'm doubly protected. Email protection also fixes up links, strips them of tracking modifiers, upgrades unencrypted HTTP URLs to HTTPS where possible, and for the rare necessary reply allows you to send directly from your duck address instead of exposing your primary email. During their closed beta, DuckDuckGo claimed that 85% of the emails it processed contained hidden trackers. To sign up for email protection, you need to use either the DuckDuckGo mobile app for iOS or Android, use DuckDuckGo's browser extension on Firefox, Chrome, Edge, or Brave, or use its beta Mac browser, the list for which must be joined in the DuckDuckGo mobile app. In my experience, using the company's apps, extensions, or browser isn't necessary to keep the email forwarding service running. So once you've set it up, you can use it anywhere. But they do allow you to autofill your duck address and create more individual throwaway email addresses, which are handy for email filtering. DuckDuckGo's email protection service works to remove trackers commonly embedded in commercial emails that send back the time opened, the location, the device used, and a whole bunch of other data. DuckDuckGo notes that the trackers tucked into email images and links can pass information back to the sender about when you opened a message, your geolocation when opening it, and which device you were using. Knowing your primary email address can also allow companies to connect it to Facebook and Google and target you for advertising across sites. The company helpfully notes that it will not track you using its anti-tracking service. When your duck addresses receive an email, we immediately apply our tracking protections and then forward it to you, never saving it in our systems. Sender information, subject lines, we don't track any of it, the company said on its blog post. DuckDuckGo is also committed to email protection for the long term and states that it worked during the closed beta to support millions of users. Ready for untracked email? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
So to get that email address, you just go to duckduck.com?
Duck.com/email. And the thing that makes it different from a throwaway address at Google is that when you open an email from a throwaway address at Google, it still has all the trackers in it. So it knows you opened it. It knows where you are. It knows what operating system you're on.
So going to the duck.com is a lot.
And when you get the email, it's already stripped of all that stuff.
There's a lot of places that will say, all right, well, we're going to send you this email, and you got to reply to it so we can verify you.
Right. And this will do that. Like I said, I had to take two of them out because one of them, there's something wrong with my mail configuration on my server. It'll receive, but it won't send. And that's me. That's on me. But the other one that I use worked perfectly. So it clearly is me. And I just have to deal with that when it's not 2 o'clock in the morning, like I said. But yeah, so if you're one of those people who wants to be truly private, like I said, if you have a throwaway address somewhere, you're still getting all the trackers. So they know where you are. They know what kind of computer you're on, what your operating system is, all kinds of information about you. But this strips all of that. And so they get zero.
Well, that's good. I'm going to have to check that out.
Yeah, you're going to have to check that out.
Yeah,
and you know, if you've got multiple email addresses, the other thing I found is you can only connect one email address to one duck.com address. So I tried to do two, and it said, you already use that address. You're already this guy. Okay. So now I'm a different guy with a different email address. Create a throwaway Gmail address.
I only need one. Yeah.
Right. Create a throwaway Gmail address. Use that to get a throwaway DuckDuckGo address, and you win. You're a winner.
Winner chicken dinner.
Exactly.
Something a little ironic. So DuckDuckGo, you know, privacy-focused search engine, right. and whatnot. They don't have privacy protection on their Whois records.
Right.
So they founded Duck.com in 1995. So Gabriel Weinberg is the founder of DuckDuckGo, knew what he wanted to do something about ducks since 1995.
Right.
And they're in Phoenixville, PA. So they're neighbors.
They're neighbors. And you can download the DuckDuckGo browser. You can use their email now. It's a whole thing here. And they have extensions that keep you safe in other browsers. And if you're using Safari, you've already got all that stuff, but nobody else does, and so this will give you that protection in other things. I started using it just a couple of days ago, sent a lot of tests to myself, signed up for a whole bunch of lists that I never will ever look at. And in every one of them, it said, oh yeah, we've stripped a whole bunch of stuff out of here. So it seems to be working.
Yeah. I use Ghostery, because in addition to just blocking stuff, it tells me what it blocked.
Right.
And that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is pretty cool.
A little disconcerting sometimes when you go to like a news page and there's hundreds of trackers.
Well, I'm using uBlock Origin, and I'm just on the Google Docs document, right? That the Soundbites Caller document that I have. It's blocked 579 things. Now, I don't know what all those are. I haven't looked.
Since this session or forever? Because you go into that folder a lot.
That's a very good question.
I just went there now and it said it blocked 7.
Well, I've got 579.
That's probably a running total.
Domains connected 3 out of 3, blocked since install.
Yeah.
42,086. and you know, most of those are not actually.
Surprisingly, the trackers on Google's Docs is Google.
Yeah, and I'm shocked by that, of course.
Yeah.
Surprise. You know, a lot of that is what fonts are you using?
Yeah.
It you know, there's lots of who cares things, but it's blocking all
of
them.
Who's going to sit there and go through, parse through all of it?
Right.
You know?
Right,
it's a pain in the butt.
Right. So if, you know, it used to be that there was zero privacy on the internet. There were also only 2 nodes on the internet. But unfortunately, that zero privacy carried over to millions of nodes on the internet. And now we're piling nonsense on top of nonsense in order to be private. And we've talked before about encrypted email, private email, that sort of fare. And if you want to know more about that, give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415. And we'll talk about what is and isn't encrypted mail on the internet. But in the meantime, we are going to take a break. That music tells us that the entire first hour of this show is now history. It is in the wind. It is gone. It is an X hour and pining for the fjords. And we will, but luckily, there's a whole nother hour of the longest running computer show in the known universe coming your way. And that means we're going to have Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you, if you give us a call. Again, those numbers, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 1-800-790-0415. And, of course, if you're watching us on YouTube or Facebook or whoever the heck they all are, you can Steve's watching those so he can give us that. And we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with more sound bites. 59 minutes after the hour. We'll be right back.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
On Facebook at Jazz 901 FM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And
so before we go back, we had a comment in the YouTube chat from Archandra about recovery can be a problem if he's got an encrypted disk.
Right.
And so if you encrypt your disk, which is often a good idea if you're in the medical or legal professions, but it does make having a backup extra important. Because if something goes wrong with that encryption, you lose the data. The whole point of encryption is no one can get to the data, not even you.
Right. And that's a weakness. Let's just say it's a weakness.
Yeah.
But there you are. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is William, all the way from Hampton, Virginia. How are things in Virginia, William?
Much too hot. Please send some of that cool weather that you're having up in Rochester down my way. Please.
What's up?
Well, as usual, you guys always open up with a lively panel discussion, and this one was definitely a live one. And then you followed up with the informal poll about Duck.com. I'm definitely on board. I'm wondering, would it be an appropriate use professionally as well? Like say I wanted to use it on, use that email on usajobs.gov, for instance.
If you're going to use it professionally, yeah, there's no reason not to.
Yeah.
I mean, there's.
Well, I don't know if I got an email from someone at duck.com, I don't know if I'd take them very seriously. Gmail.com, okay. Sure.
Yeah, that's very true.
AOL.com? Hotmail.com?
No. Wait a minute. Couldn't he have both? Just have it forward?
No, it works the other way. You send it to duck.com, and that forwards it to your real email because they're the ones who do the stripping.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I wouldn't necessarily. I mean, you could, certainly, but I wouldn't necessarily.
I was wondering if it might be appropriate or not. Yeah.
I don't think it's inappropriate, but it just
less likely to be taken serious.
Yeah.
Right.
Less likely to be taken seriously. That pretty much answers my question.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Well, unless you're applying to security professional jobs, and then they might like that.
Right.
Point taken. Yep, but I'm definitely on board. Thanks, fellas.
There you go. Thanks, William. Have fun with that.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, I think they're doing a really nice thing. And the beauty of it is they're not doing anything with your email but stripping it and forwarding it. Yeah. They're not saving it. They can't lose it. It has nothing to do with them.
Mm-hmm.
Once they've done the stripping, they move it on to you.
Yeah.
So they don't need huge computers. They don't need any storage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful little service to have.
I've read some interesting news stories about the you know, looking for a job prospect. I haven't looked for a job in 30 years. You hear stories about parents telling the kids, you know, and I remember when I was a kid, you go to the store and hand your resume and put your suit on and do all that. And
everything's online now.
There's just a subplot on 911 Lone Star, where he sent his kid into the computer company wearing a suit, and everyone looked at him funny. So a lot of times the new recruiting managers now don't want that. They don't want to see you. They don't want your resume printed out on pink paper so it stands out among all of other. Fill it out online just like the application process said, which shows you can follow instructions.
Yep,
which is what they like.
We back when I was at RIT, we hired a lot of students to work for us. We had trouble getting rid of them, but we hired a lot. And the first one I ever hired distance, we had, you know, she was out of the country at the time. But, you know, we were hiring and she wanted to apply. she gave a great interview. We hired her. People kept saying, "How can you haven't seen her? You don't know what she can do." I said, "We had an interview, like we have with everybody else. We looked at her work,
and like then it was a phone interview, not a Zoom interview, where I can see that you didn't clean your bedroom."
That's exactly right. And she ended up being one of my favorite and best workers. You know, it was the world has changed. The world has changed, yep. And that goes right along with our first thing about working in an office versus
Apple
working
there.
Remotely.
Yeah.
You know, we've had the one person I regret losing over all my years. You know, people moved on because they graduated or whatever, but we lost a guy because he wanted to move to Florida. His wife's family was there. She wanted to be with them, and he wanted to work for me distance. And I thought that was a great idea. Yep. And the higher-ups wouldn't go for it.
Too many.
Well, how can you manage him?
Right.
The same way I manage him now. He's not sitting in my office. I don't spend my day sitting on his lap watching him work.
Too many bosses are afraid people will screw off if they're not around to hover over them. People are going to screw off anyway. They're going to figure out ways to screw off, even going into work. But that's a very small minority of the people. Most people want to work. So if I want to get up real early, get some work done, then get my kid up and on the school bus, and then take care of some household chores, and then I'll work a few more hours in the afternoon. I got my task done.
Right.
It doesn't matter that I didn't work 8 hours straight for you.
Right.
An hour here, 2 hours there, 6 hours there, 8 hours there. Yeah.
My daughter has worked for several years remote.
Mm-hmm.
And there are days when she works 10 or 12 hours, and there are days she works 2. Because that's all the work there is.
Mm-hmm.
You can't do work that isn't there. But that means that in the rest of that time, she's got her phone on her. If she goes to the store or she takes a nap or whatever happens, the phone goes off and says, "You've got another thing to do." She goes and does that thing. Yeah. There's no reason. And she gets all her work done early and correctly and well. And what more can you ask of an employee, no matter where they are?
Well, that's where facts, the statistics have truly proven it totally bogus. You know, these bosses, like you were saying, they're goofing off in that. Contraire. All the statistics and everything else, the employer usually makes out better
the last 2 years
because they have
that.
A more productive person.
They're happier.
Yeah, and they don't have to pay for the office space. Like you said,
the
better environment,
the
they can control their hours. You know, if they got kids at home, no problem. You know, they can take a break from it, run the kids to school, come back.
And before we get all the calls and all the people in the Facebook chat typing away, it depends on what your job is.
Yeah.
If your job is changing tires, yes, you have to be there. But if your job is programming or managing the email that comes into a company or whatever it is, answering complaints, that sort of fair.
Answering phone calls these days.
Even answering phone calls, you don't have to be in an office.
That was probably one of the first remote jobs is tech support.
Yes.
Yeah.
I set up a remote system, the first one we had at RIT, and my boss kept saying, "Okay, but why?" And just didn't quite get it until one day, 7:30 in the morning, I'm driving into work. My phone goes off. I pull into a parking lot. It's my boss. "Oh, my God, we've got a problem." I said, "Hold on a minute." And I logged in from my phone, fixed the problem, and said, "Now, you've asked me why I set up this remote system. I could have been there in 20 minutes and fixed the problem, but it's fixed now because I could do it remotely. I didn't even have to come into the office to do that."
Yep.
So that's the kind of thing, it depends. Yes, it depends entirely on the job.
Yeah.
And of course, it depends entirely on the employee. But more employees are willing to do the job than not. We had a guy in a place I worked, and I don't think he's listening, who would come in the morning, put his coat on his chair and leave. And then he'd come back at 4:30, pick up his coat and leave. Now, that guy wasn't going to work no matter where he was.
People are going to screw off. They're still going to screw off.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Doesn't matter if they're at work or home.
But I've
and
always
you'll find that out soon when their work doesn't get done.
That's exactly the point. Yeah. That I have always thought
that's the
that working
line.
Remotely is an amplifier.
Mm-hmm.
If you are a good employee, it shows up and makes you a better employee. And if you're a bad employee, it shows up and you get fired.
It'll like accent it, you know, and you know, make it shine, right. Or like you say, be your underdoing.
It can be the shinola or the other thing.
Yeah.
There's a great Reddit subreddit called Malicious Compliance.
Yep.
And there was one where a supervisor in a construction shop was saying, you know, you got to change all the light bulbs in this machine and all the machines on the floor. And the book says it will take 15 minutes, so it better take 15 minutes. And one of the workers says, well, yeah, but I can usually do it in about 5, so I can get it done faster. The book says 15 minutes.
Yep.
Yes, sir. 15 minutes.
I knew a guy whose summer job was welding in a railroad yard, not here in New York State. He was welding in a railroad yard. His job, union employee, was to weld 6 long sheets, pipes, and to certain spots on the rail cars. And the union job said 6 per day. And he said, Nick, I can do one of those in 15 minutes. I tried to do a 7th one, and I almost got fired.
Yep.
Okay, I do my 6, I go home. I work about an hour and a half a day. I get paid union wages for 8 hours, and everybody's happy. Okay.
That's one thing. You know,
so you
I
usually
know
hear that the other way around. You have to do 100 of these a day, and well, that's going to take 16 hours.
Right.
I don't care. You have to do 100 of them a day.
Well, and his other problem, of course, was if the rail cars weren't done, he couldn't do his job.
Yeah.
That was a problem for him because he didn't get 6 done.
Because the guy ahead of him, he didn't finish his job. Don't care.
Right.
That's where unions, you know, they got their good side and the bad side. Sometimes I go, you know, I'm driving around, and you see some of these construction jobs. And here you see 8 people standing around and 1 guy down in the hole.
For years.
He's the only guy rated for confined spaces.
Right. For years at Nazareth College, when I was working backstage, we had the IATSE, International Association of Theater, whatever they are. They're the backstage crew, the union for the backstage crew. Mm-hmm. The IATSE people would come in and we would do all the work. The students would do all the work. Loading and unloading, unless it was something very delicate or the boss was around. And we kept saying for years, we'd say, I got to get in the union.
Yeah.
I have got to get in the union.
I remember reading one from a...
Now, on the other hand, though, let me just say, on the other hand, when they went to other theaters that didn't have students, they worked like dogs.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I get that.
There's both sides of the fence.
And I get that. And they worked hard and they worked well.
Mm-hmm.
I read one where a woman forklift driver was, you know, chatting with some other construction friends of hers, and this guy came up and pointed to the, can you drive a forklift? And the guy says, no, I'm not rated, sir. Went to every single man around the circle. Can you drive a forklift? No, sir, I'm not rated. And ran away mad. Never asked the one person that could drive a forklift because she happened to be a woman.
Right. That's exactly right. Yeah. excuse me. I beg your pardon. Somebody say something.
No, that's where, you know, like I say, there's both good sides and bad sides to the union. And, you know, I know folks are going to, you know, go up in arms one way or the other.
Yeah,
but
8-hour work day, 5-hour work week.
It depends. It depends on the circumstances where some folks, yeah, they need a union in there. It's just like, what was it? Amazon. Amazon is trying to get unions in because, you know, like you say, they're...
Well, the people at Amazon, not Amazon.
Right, but they're being held to, you know, well, you got to do so many an hour.
Apple's running into problems now. Several of their stores have unionized. There was a big mess, and Apple got fined for stolen wages.
Yeah.
So at the end of your shift, so your shift ends at 5, you clock out at 5, then you have to get searched before you leave the store. Well, if 20 people are leaving at 5, it might take you 10, 15, 20 minutes.
Right.
That you're still in the store but not getting paid. So there was a lawsuit, and Apple lost. And so now they search you while you're on the clock, and then you clock out. In fact, that happened to a very similar story to someone I know, where the time clock was in the center of the building. And so when people showed up and walked in the door, it took them a minute, literally a minute, to walk to the time clock to punch in. And they sent their union rep to the boss saying, "We're losing wages here because we're in the building and not getting paid."
Right.
So they had to move the time clock to the door.
I once quit a job because the boss insisted that I clean before I clocked in, sweep the floors, get the shelves. This was
wage theft. That's what it is.
Right. That I do all of that stuff before I clocked in and then after I clocked out. Oh, no, absolutely not.
Oh, hell no.
Well, that ain't happening.
There was another subreddit is Am I the A-hole? And there was a security guard that said, I get paid from 9 to 5. So I show up at 9, clock in for work, and then put my coat in the cupboard and get my keys and my...
Right.
And people and the boss yelled at him for being 10 minutes late for work. So I got here at 5, or at 9. You're supposed to be ready for work at 9. So how about my 2-hour commute and the 10 minutes it takes me to get into my uniform? We don't pay you for that.
Right.
That's a problem now.
That's a problem. The first union show I did off Broadway, holy moly. I knew the guy who was the union rep. He was a friend of mine. But he, and his sweet, nice, gentle, kind, friendly, happy, until it was union time. And then he became a bulldog, a rabid bulldog with 2 heads and 50 teeth. He, you know, time for a break. Can we spend 10 minutes? You can spend 10 minutes, but we get 20 minutes on the other side. I mean, he would negotiate down to the microsecond. And you know, he wasn't, how do I put this? He wasn't a steel rod. So he would negotiate with you. We really just need 10 more minutes to finish this scene. Okay, but you'll pay for that on the other side. I'll bend, but then I'm going to bend back a little farther than I bent. You know, so it was pretty interesting. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Jim from Rochester, New York. What's up, Jim?
Oh, hello, Nick. I have a question for you guys. I don't know if you've ever heard of this. This past week, I think it was like Tuesday or Wednesday, as I was going out the door, my Dell laptop all of a sudden started like making loud beeping sounds like a fire alarm or something going off. It scared the heck out of me.
Sure.
And I looked and it was a white screen and I immediately shut it down. Have you ever heard of a laptop doing that?
Well, I've heard of machines making these kinds of sounds for any one of 100 reasons. Sometimes it's an infection of some sort. Sometimes if you've got an uninterruptible power supply and there's a problem with the power itself, you'll get that. So
spikes. Fan bearing wearing out.
Yeah, it could be there. I mean, there's all. What happened the next time you turned it on?
Well, obviously I shut it down immediately.
Right.
And I turned it back on and everything was fine. I checked. Yeah. Like the windows, and I have Kaspersky, you know, everything I checked, it said no actions needed, nothing.
You could have also gotten a spike.
What's that?
You know, a power surge.
Oh. That would cause loud,
it's just resetting everything. So, depending on what the system was doing at the time,
some systems have a temperature alert. So, say the fan isn't working because it's clogged with dust, it can go get over temperature and sound an alarm.
So, there's a lot of reasons that it could be, things can happen.
Right.
And, you know, for us to sit there and say, oh, it was just this, or this, no, we can't.
And that is actually a known thing that Dell computers do when there's an issue like that. It could be a how old is this machine?
1 year.
Yeah, so it's probably not a bad component of some sort. But It could be overheating. It could be, as these guys said, a power surge or drop for a moment. You know, we often see when someone has power that's just enough to the computer, and then the refrigerator kicks in, or
air conditioning,
the air conditioning, or the printer, a laser printer turns on, or multiple of those at once.
I always got mad when my dad turned on his razor Saturday mornings to shave, and it messed up my cartoons.
Well, the well, the other big thing that you wouldn't see maybe necessarily in, at your house is if there's construction going on in your neighborhood. And all of a sudden, you know, they're working on, right now, the city, they're throughout the whole city replacing a lot of telephone poles. They're putting up bigger and taller ones. So sometimes it can, you know, when they're doing that and moving from one pole over to another, you could get a quick hiccup.
Right, a power fluctuation of some sort. The good news is you did exactly the right thing. The way to fix it is to shut your machine down, wait a couple of minutes, and then turn it on again.
And I checked all the settings and everything else was totally normal. No actions needed. You've answered my question. So you have heard of this, like a loud blaring alarm going
on? Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Oh. That's the first time I ever had that.
Yeah, and it is kind of rare, and it, and particularly, like we said, if you live in an apartment building and there's a whole lot of people who suddenly, you know, turn on a microwave and an air conditioner, and you know, in the building, not one person.
No, mine's just a regular house.
Yeah, but there's so...
There's somebody that related it to the emergency alert system, annoying... alarm that comes out your radio.
But basically it's a normal thing. It's a thing that happens. It's not something wrong with your machine, but it's probably something to do with power, and if they're doing anything in your neighborhood, that can happen.
So if your machine's in another room unattended when something goes wrong, the noise is supposed to draw you in to fix the problem before it melts and causes more water issues.
That scared the heck out of me. But yeah, that's what it sounded like you just said, the emergency alarm system, like on a TV or a radio, you know, when it blares out.
Yep. That's exactly right.
Okay, well, thank you very much. I just wanted to know if you had heard of this.
Yeah, we had. Thanks, Jim.
Okay, have a nice day.
You too. Bye-bye. Yeah, there's, excuse me, there's all kinds of... things we never know about our computers until there's a real problem, and that's one of them. It mostly seems to be a Dell thing. They've added that, and most people never see it. Particularly if you have a laptop, you rarely will see it because you're really running off the battery. But on my desktop, for example, I have a UPS on it. But if I didn't, that I might see that particularly. You know, in the summer, yesterday, a couple of weeks ago, my air conditioner kicked in just as I was printing something on my laser printer. Like that noise. That's the noise. And it tripped that power bar. And so I had to reset everything. So you see that semi-regularly.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you can. It happens. I mean,
it happens.
And trying to, you know, without actually seeing it or hearing it, you know, we can only give our best guess.
Right.
And
right. All right, back to the phones. No, we don't have a phone. We don't have a phone. We don't have a phone. We have a phone, but we've got less than a minute.
Yeah,
we'll just have that person wait. Okay, but that's on me.
But like I say, that's the big thing right now with, and I've heard this happen to a number of folks around because they are going around doing one heck of a lot of pole changes.
Yeah, they are
because they
not dancing changes.
Yeah, they've literally set new regulations for the height that.
Yep, they're raising them all. And they're adding more wires because there's more wires.
Well, because of green light and everybody else coming through. Yeah. And now
Frontier
just announced that they're coming through with their fiber program. So, you know.
But until we get fiber to your house, we can put in 2 megabit DSL.
Right.
No thanks.
Right. Well, that's a separate issue right there. But yeah, there's a whole bunch of that stuff going on. All right, listen, we're going to take a quick break. But we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, who's ever waiting on the line, and you. You can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. And we'll be back with a whole lot more sound bites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you on the other side.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Problem with chair dancing is when you bash your toe on the desk.
Ouch.
All right, welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 34 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites, and we have Bill from Greece, New York, waiting patiently on the line. You are being patient, aren't you, Bill?
Oh, of course.
Of course. What's up?
Yeah, I wonder if I may have missed this, but did you guys talk about LastPass being hacked?
No, we did not.
Is that something that I need to worry about? Should I change my password manager?
Mm-mm. No, according to the company, the LastPass hack didn't actually get any data. What they got was source code for the program itself. Which means
they've
got
source code, can't they? You know, configure that and then go in and get your data?
Well, yes and no. They can look through the source code and see what the vulnerabilities are, but so will the developers now. In fact, that's what they're doing. That's what they've been doing since the hack was, what, a day ago?
Isn't some of the encryption protocols already open source?
And most of the encryption protocols are already open source, so it's not going to help them to have the source code.
Everything is protected by your password.
Yeah, that's the key.
If you have a weak password, then it doesn't matter if there's a hack or source code.
Yeah, it could have the whole program.
Yeah.
And without your password, which is encrypted, they can't, you know, they're there at the door, but they can't get in.
Right. So, the hack was, it doesn't make LastPass look good, but it wasn't any customer data. So what happened was somebody cracked the developer systems, which means they got the source code, but the developers don't have any access to the customer data. They didn't get your data. And again, the source code is mostly using open source stuff, so they didn't get much of anything there either.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yep, thank you. Yeah, it was one of the things I thought about talking about. But again, it was basically a nothing burger, as they say these days.
We have determined that an unauthorized party gained access to portions of the LastPass development environment through a single compromised developer account and took portions of the source code. Right. We have no evidence that this incident involved access to any customer data or encrypted password vaults. So a compromised developer account. So that developer had a weak password?
Yes. That's exactly what that means.
Yeah.
Or wasn't using duck.com. All right. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Bob from Gates, New York. What's up, Bob?
Hi. I've got green light, and I bought a Netgear router, a Nighthawk. And I'm having a lot of problems logging into it. I can get it on it with the internet, but I can't get it wireless. And I'll go in there, put my password in, and it'll say, password's not right. Reset it, and it still can't get in there.
You may have to do a hard reset of the Netgear router so you can set up a new password.
But you can log on with
wired?
That password wired, yes?
Yes. But it still won't give me wireless. I can't get to wireless. So, I can only get...
Okay, that's a little easier then. So then you log into the Netgear console, And go to the wireless setup and change the wireless password there.
Yeah, change the wireless password.
Okay.
See, when you're logging into the server, when you're logging into the router itself, you use the admin password.
Right, right.
When you're logging into the network, you use the wireless password.
Which shouldn't be the same, but they could be.
Right, and they shouldn't be the same. But even if you're logging in to the router via wireless, you use the admin password, not the wireless password.
Okay.
So it depends on what your target is. If your target is to get to the router itself to do admin things, you always, no matter how you're connecting, use the admin password. If your objective is to access the internet via wireless, then you use the wireless password.
Okay.
And those passwords are often written on the side of the router.
Or the bottom.
Yeah. It didn't used to be that way because that's a security violation. Anyone walking up could see your password. But people need to know their own passwords. And if someone is in your house wandering around to look at that box, you've got bigger problems.
The other thing is you should always change the admin password. Because everybody knows the default passwords on those things.
Which is usually admin.
It's usually admin. So you should change that default password and write it down.
So at some point, I need to use this password on the bottom of the router and then change it?
Yes. So when you log in as the admin, that's the admin password that's on the bottom of the router.
Okay.
And you shouldn't continue to use that one. You should change it.
And write it down.
And write that one down.
And tape it to the bottom of the router again.
So when you need to change a setting later on, that's what the admin password is used, to change settings in the router.
Right. And the problem is if somebody else logs into your router as admin, they own it.
Okay. Thank you all very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You're awesome. Thanks.
Bye-bye. Yeah, that's a admin password versus wireless password is can be confusing.
Yeah. I've seen a lot of the routers now, including the Nighthawks, have an app that you use on your smartphone for the setup, and it talks you through creating the Wi-Fi name, creating a Wi-Fi password, creating the admin password right in the app itself.
Right.
And then some of the routers will have those passwords written on the side of the router for you. And they're random now. They're being randomized for every router. It used to be that every Linksys router, the username was admin, password was admin. Linksys, Netgear, D-Link. Yeah, pretty much every router has come pre-configured with the admin password being admin. But now through these setup programs they're having you run, you change the admin password so that someone else on your network. When I go to restaurants and log into the restaurant Wi-Fi, every now and then, I'll run a LAN scan to see what I find.
Yep.
And if I find a router, I'll see how well the security is, and I'll tell them if there's a problem.
I have done that. Yep. I have done that same thing.
Yeah.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Jim from Rochester, New York. What's up, Jim?
I'm trying to use Google Drive to transfer files from one laptop to the other.
Mm-hmm.
And the way it's working, I can see my JPEG files, but it doesn't seem to transfer my MP4 files.
Are you getting an error message during the copy?
No.
So the copy says it finishes, and when it said it finished, it doesn't show you those files on the drive.
Let me ask you this. How long should it take? Does it take an inordinate long time to transfer?
If you're copying a large amount of files, yes.
Oh, it can take a very long time. It depends on it depends on the speed. It depends on several things. One is the speed of your internet connection.
I'm doing a 1 terabyte backup for a customer, and it's going to take about 4 days.
Yeah. So depending on how big those MP4 files are, they can take quite a while. Now, usually...
And how many?
Right. And usually when you upload something to Google Drive, you'll see in the corner that little pop-up menu that shows you what's being uploaded, and then there's a little circle that gets blue the farther it goes, and when it hits the other end, then that file is done. You get a little check mark.
Okay. Well, these MP4s are usually about 50 megabytes.
Yeah, so they're gonna take a little while. Depends, again, on how fast your internet connection is. And that's the upload speed, not the download speed, right? So often what you see advertised is the download speed, but the upload speed is much slower. But you should see
progress bar.
The progress circle.
Progress pie.
What?
Progress
sign.
Pie.
Progress pie. Very good. Being filled in as you go. And that will move it up. And then often moving it down is faster than moving it up, because many systems, many internet connections are faster down than up.
Okay, well, I haven't noced that progress icon, so I'll look again and I'll take my time to see what happens.
But try uploading one at a time and watching. Sorry, go ahead.
I thought I waited long enough, but maybe I didn't.
Yeah, try uploading one and seeing how long that takes.
Okay. Okay.
And that'll give you an idea. Also, do you have enough room?
Oh, yes.
Okay, because you only get 15 gig.
Okay, I'll check that. But okay. I think I have enough room.
Okay, good.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Yep, bye-bye. Yeah, it's important to note just how much space you've got up there, because often on almost any of those, if there isn't enough room, you get a quick message that there's not enough room, and then it goes away, and then you don't know what you're looking at.
Yeah.
So
let me upload 175 meg.
Well, but file. Again, the speed you've got
in the very bottom right corner of the window is the progress.
Right.
And it's
a circle, and you see it get bluer.
It gets bluer and bluer and bluer, yeah. But it's the very bottom right corner, and it looks like there's a an up caret and a down caret icon. That's an old school caret arrow. to show and hide the progress bar, and it just finished. But we're on wicked fast internet here.
We're on wicked fast. It's wicked fast, yeah.
I think we're at 100 up.
Yeah. Our next caller is Kevin from Greece, New York. What's up, Kevin?
I'm having a problem with a TIFF file that will not delete. I can open the file and look at it. It's just a TIFF. It's 10,000 kilobytes, but I can't delete this thing. It just hangs. I'm on Windows 10.
Have you restarted the machine?
Oh, yeah. This machine gets rebooted every night.
Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, and I checked the read-only settings.
What version of Windows are you on?
10. What is it, 21H1 or H2, I think, whatever it is. Yeah. So,
have you tried force deleting?
Okay, how do I do that?
Control-Shift-Escape while you open the file manager? Give me a second to think about this. Yeah.
So I'm in...
Okay, well, a couple of things. First, if it's open in the system, you can't... Do you get an error message?
No, I don't get an error message. It just hangs.
Okay, because if the file is in use or the system thinks it's open, you will not be able to
delete. Yeah, but I usually get an error message. That.
Right,
yeah.
And you don't get an access denied message.
No.
The disk, how full is the disk?
Let's see. That's a good question.
Thank you.
Yeah, that would take a minute to figure out. Okay.
Well, so but the point disk- is if it's too full or the disk itself is write protected, but that only really is applicable if it's a thumb drive or something.
No, this is on the hard drive on the system.
If the file is read-only...
That's what he said he checked.
Or corrupted.
I checked that.
Oh, you did, yeah.
You can try command line with the administrator privileges.
How full is the recycle bin?
Ooh.
Because on Windows, you said 10?
Yeah.
When on Windows 10, you only get a certain amount of space for the recycle bin. Once it's full, you can't delete anything else. So you should empty the recycle bin. There are people who use the recycle bin to save things. Do not do that. Yeah. Do not ever do that. If you've got something in the recycle bin, delete it.
Sometimes it will delete itself.
Because, yes, sometimes it will delete itself.
I wish my recycle bin would empty itself, and I didn't have to haul it down to the road.
Right. So if your recycle bin is full, then you cannot delete anything else. The other thing is it could be infected. So
okay.
You should be able to force a delete by running – if you run a
command line.
The command line, the command prompt, as administrator.
Okay.
Right? And then go to where that file is and say del space the file name. That should delete it no matter what, and that will actually delete it and not throw it in that full recycle bin.
Okay, del space file name.
Right, but you have to be in that directory, so you go CD.
Or drag the file. So once you get a command line open, in administrator, you type del space for delete, and then drag the file name into the command line window, and it will fill the whole path
out
for you.
Right, right.
Oh, okay. Oh, you can drag into it. Okay.
After the word del, after you type del space,
right,
then you can drag it in.
And the command line I get to on Windows 10, I've forgotten how to
command,
do that.
Command R, or Windows R, brings up the run command.
Oh, okay. All right, Windows.
But you want to run it as the administrator.
Right.
So the
type CMD, and then press Control-Shift-Enter. Opens it as administrator. I posted a link on ways to
there you go.
Delete
so
files that
are, link is there.
Yeah.
So try those things, but the first thing to do is to make sure that A, everything in your recycle bin is something you actually want to throw away, and then empty your recycle bin.
And then see if it'll go away then.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not sure that's it, because I think I've deleted some other things or recycled some other things since this file. But.
Well, it's not just putting them in. It's also then deleting them from there. Right-click on the recycle bin and say empty it.
Okay. All right. A couple of things to try there. Okay.
Yep.
You can also try save mode.
Yeah, yeah.
That's not safe.
Right. If you're in, if nothing else works, you can always go into safe mode and see if you can delete it from the command line there. But the other thing, of course, is as I started to mention, it could be infected and the virus is preventing you from deleting it, in which case, dance the security tango, make sure your machine is clean, and then you should be able to delete the file. It is not unheard of that TIFF files get infected.
Mm-hmm.
So you should check that. It's
stuff happens.
Stuff happens. It's hard under Windows to know exactly, because so many people never use the command line. And there are some things that work better, faster, and easier, or only at the command line. And
Edward.
That's I remember Edlin.
Every time you mention command line, it takes me back to the days of Edlin.
Oh, who didn't use Edlin? Used it all the time. I told you there was one point where I had to edit a file on a Windows machine. The only editor was Edlin. I didn't have any admin access to install anything else. So I fired up Edlin, sat there and said, fingers, do your stuff. And they remembered all the commands and what to do and everything else. And I edited the file and everything worked fine after that. And I thought that I guarantee you that's the last time I use
Edlin. But that's
and
why I think I find Linux so easy to use because, I grew up in the days.
You're not afraid of the command line.
The terminal window, I am very comfortable. Matter of fact, when I was doing a lot of the program at RIT, when I was taking my courses there, it was all on the VAX.
Yep.
So, you had to log in, and it was just a monochrome screen, folks. And you had to write all your code and do all your commands and everything else. And like you say, you learned the up and down arrow keys to bring back the last previous commands or doing a CD and then the space and a dash should take you up one level. And
the
all those
WSDX triangle
yeah.
to move around, absolutely.
And then learning how to add, you know, edit a file.
Right.
With Nano and that, it just... Yeah,
I tell my students all the time, often enough, when I have to log into a server, I only have a command line because I'm remote.
Yeah.
I don't have a GUI. Yeah. If I don't know command line, I don't get anything done.
I was one of the first people in college to learn screen editing.
Oh, yeah.
We had one screen terminal.
Right.
Oh. And
that's the one you used to unplug.
Well, because it annoyed me when people did line editing on it.
Right.
So I'd unplug it, and then I'd go fix it, and I could do my screen editing.
And then break it again when you left.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, there's a whole lot of... There's a long-standing religious debate between Edlin and Vim. I solved that by using Nano.
Yeah, Nano...
It's easy, it's fast, it does everything you need it to do.
And just doing the commands, you know, to copy it, to back up the file.
Right.
And then create a new one.
Right. Well, you can set Nano to automatically create a backup.
Yeah.
So I don't even bother with that anymore. So I don't care anymore. But if I'm making a major change, then I do the backup myself before I edit the file. But there's learning the command line is not essential anymore, but it can be necessary
mm-hmm.
when you get to the point where you have an issue like Kevin did, and you really need to go into the command line to fix something. So, and you don't have to know a lot of commands. Del for delete, CP for copy. That's, you know, I mean, I don't know how much you really need to know. Really, that del command is the one for when you find a file like Kevin did that is undeletable for whatever reason.
But and folks have to realize, though, just back up a second, they have to do everything with the sudo command, because otherwise you could type
in Linux,
a del command, and it's going to tell you, nope, you don't have the rights.
Right.
Sorry, nope.
And under Linux, you use sudo, which is super user do. You are essentially root.
That's why it's sudo, not sudo.
Right. Sudo super user do this. In Windows, you open a command prompt as administrator.
And that's... Archander also points out that command line is repeatable. Up arrow gets you your last command back, and then you can type the one file character change you need to make to do the next thing.
The command that I still am happy I learned 20 years ago is if you type in a command that should have been sudo, you can then type sudo !! Hit enter, and it runs the previous command as super user.
Oh, cool.
So sudo bang bang is... I forgot to say sudo before I entered that command. And I admit it, to this day, I smile and chuckle whenever I use that, and I've been using it for 20 years. Apparently, I'm easily amused.
Works on BSD, too.
There you go.
What was it? Sudo?
Sudo bang bang, !!
Oh, okay.
So let's say I type del a file, and it says...
And then you forgot to type sudo, because it'll say you don't have the rights.
So you type sudo bang bang, no spaces.
Oh, so it's just all...
Sudo bang bang.
Well, worked with spaces.
Okay, okay. Sudo bang bang, and off it goes.
I'll have to remember that one.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Like I said, it continues to amuse me 20 years later.
Well, no, like you say, you just get going and, oh, shoot. Especially. Right.
Well, because there's some systems I log in, I have to actually log as the administrator to do certain things.
Mm-hmm.
There are some systems where you automatically log in as the administrator. Those make me crazy. And then there are the other systems where you don't. So where you use sudo and where you don't use sudo, and particularly when you're using multiple systems simultaneously, it gets a little nuts.
Oh, Archangel says bang bang means redo the last command, period.
Yes.
So if you do sudo bang bang, it sudo the last command.
Right, exactly.
So I don't even have to do up arrow to get to the last command. Just type bang bang and you get the last command.
Right.
Learn something.
And do you know why most Unix commands are two characters? Because there's not enough single characters.
Yes.
They had to have two characters. That's why there's not three, because there's only two.
Right. Well, and the other thing is, one character, you can more easily make a mistake than two.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But, yeah, if you're a command line user, things start to really flow. All right. That, as we say, is that. That music tells us that this show is now in the history books. The entire 2 solid hours of Sound Bites is in the history books. And I want to thank each and every one of you for joining us on this journey. I want to thank Dave Enright. I want to thank Steve Ray. He wasn't an anchor. He was a propeller. And I'm Nick Francesco. Poor Steve. I insult him every week and he just goes, yeah.
You don't know what I'm thinking.
Yes, I do. And we will see you all next week on the longest running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you that we are member supported Jazz 90.1. Be good to one another, will you? We'll see you in just 166 hours.
And fireworks at the Heli Show tonight at 8:00.